You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, The Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. We've got a great show for you tonight. We're recording this on the evening of Wednesday, January 9th, 2019, a little less than 36 hours before the MLS Super Draft of 2019 starts. But first, my friend Daniel Sperry, how are you? Are you excited for the Super Draft? And more importantly, are you prepared for all the therapy you're going to have to give the entire city of Kansas City when they inevitably lose their home playoff game this coming weekend?
Yeah, well, I'm not jumping into the Kansas City Chiefs thing because I've heard enough about it already. If there's anything I'm prepping for is the inevitable outrage, or the outrage that's already taking place, as the San Francisco Giants have will announce that is no longer AT&T Park. It is now going to be like the naming rights thing went up. So they've signed now a 20-year deal with Oracle. If you're familiar with it,
as the NBA, in Oracle, you know, Arena.
As in Oracle Arena, yeah. I mean, it's a Bay Area-based company and all that. So it's now Oracle Stadium or Oracle Park. I remember when it switched from Pac Bell to AT&T Park, and I was really weirded out by that. So now I get to be weirded out again. But anyways, MLS Super Draft, you know, like, it's going to be fun. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to buy the MLS PR marketing train, but I am continuing to fail to see it in anything beyond, like, I don't really care for the first round. I don't see the value anymore, but I will still watch it. I will still tweet about it. I will still write about it because, you know, that's just where we are.
Yeah, no, I feel similar to you, Dan. You know, I was looking back and, surprisingly, Wikipedia actually has a very good collection in terms of the organization of the drafts, in terms of where players were drafted, and then getting a sense of where they are right now. And then, you know, if you've ever been on Wikipedia, you know, you have the blue highlight sometimes underlined for a, you know, something that has a link to it, either a reference or has its own Wikipedia page. And then you scroll down to, like, basically from, like, the bottom third of the second round, and then most of the third, and then pretty much the entire fourth round draft pick, all the player names are completely red, meaning that they don't have a hyperlink to them, that they don't have a Wikipedia page, which probably means that they're not playing soccer, or if they are, you know, it's like for a PDL team, or, you know, not Detroit City FC, for example. So I agree with you, Dan. I'm going to start a rule for myself this year that I'm going to care about. The first 75% of the first round, or once every single team has been on the clock with a chance to pick, whichever one of those comes first. So then potentially you either have, you know, the majority of the top talent going, or to the point where everybody's had a chance to take whoever they have as their, you know, number one player who's left and available off the board, or they've got a chance to make some sort of trade to either get out of that situation or get into a better situation. But that's how I feel about that. That said, there's still a number of very good generation Adidas players. There's still a decent crop of seniors on here. And, you know, that being said, Dan, you know, I say this as, you know, someone who covers a team who drafted Dominic Baggi and Nicky Jackson in the fourth round. There is still going to be somebody who you have never heard of, folks, who you've never seen kick a soccer ball ever, who is going to get drafted. You're going to think nothing of it, and they're going to end up getting signed by an MLS team and have an actual functional MLS career. I think those numbers are few and far between, you know. Gone are the days where, you know, the U.S. men's national team is made up of majority players who played in college, or even an MLS Cup winner is majority players who played in college, played college soccer in MLS. That said, I still think that there's viable options here. With that, Dan, let's get into it. And I guess we'll start in chronological order. FC Cincinnati 2019 MLS expansion team have the first overall draft pick. They've been pretty mums about whether or not they're going for a player, or they're potentially going to be open to taking phone calls. You know, when Landon Donovan or whoever, you know, says the so-and-so, you are now on the clock. You know, like they have with the big draft boards for, the NBA and the NHL and the NFL. And they also acquired a bazillion picks. Your thoughts on Cincinnati's draft prospects, and what are they thinking in particular, you know, getting every single Philadelphia Union draft pick for less than $200,000 in allocation money kind of makes me think that people aren't valuing anything beyond those top 10 picks. Dan, your thoughts on that word salad with Skyline Chili that I just gave you?
Yeah, I don't buy the draft strategy, because I think Paul Tenorio just tweeted it out as we were recording it. So, you know, I guess I have to give him credit for saying it out loud before I did, or at least tweeting it out loud before I did. This isn't the NFL. Like stockpiling, like in the NFL, you can generally get like contributing players within the fifth, sixth, seventh round. And a lot of times, some of the best players in the league come, you know, being drafted between the third and the seventh round. However, that's not how this goes. You know, you sit there and, you know, you can name guys that have, in the fourth round in the past few years, that have done it. I mean, like you said, Nicky Jackson and Dom Baggi. Dom Baggi netted you Kellen Acosta, who at one point was one of the best American, you know, prospects in the game. Cool. That's a nice, you know, in reality, a free fourth round pick can go and net you a solid two-way midfielder that has a very, very high, a much higher ceiling. That's a great piece of, in all, you look at all those things, that's a great piece of work there. Nicky Jackson is a solid player. And I think we'll see more of him this year. Adam John, you know, him with the Columbus Crew, where he was originally drafted by the San Jose Earthquakes. He scored at least 10, 15 goals with the San Jose Earthquakes over his 3 or 4 years with them before moving to the Crew. I mean, Adam John was that guy. And that was back when the draft was a lot more highly regarded in terms of bringing prospects and talent and at least being deeper. You know, you really felt like those, you know, first two draft picks, even in the second and third round, you could find players. Not the case anymore. It's continuing to shrink. There's a great, if you're into like the Onion type stuff, go check out the Nutmeg News article. That was hilarious this week. It was something about U.S. after this draft and all this stuff, they're still going to, and getting all these young, talented American prospects, they're still going to choose to overpay a 29-year-old Scandinavian who at some point played for somebody in the Swedish Allsvenskan. But, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm excited to see. So like I said, goodness, I'm trying to come back to it. Like I said, this is not the way to do it in this draft. But the questions that I had of FC Cincinnati's front office and how they were going to operate beforehand, I think are starting to rear its head, because Jeff Birding is probably not, may not be as well versed in the American soccer scene, whereas the last few years that draft has become less and less, you know, this in importance. Jeff Birding was not, their GM was not ever a soccer, like that was his first position that he had ever held in a soccer franchise, was as a GM. So while he's made some nice moves, I question all these stockpiles and stuff like that. Because yeah, you're getting a lot of young American talent that's going to help you out. But the question is how much of an impact are they really going to be? They have a solid roster out there, and they're going to get a lot of young players in there. And I guess that might be them trying to fill out a USL team and kind of have a nice back and forth. We'll see how it goes. I'm trying to find the positive there. But again, like, I don't see the point in having so many draft picks, just because so many of them rarely work out. And a lot of these teams are end up picking players that will ultimately play more appearances for their USL team than their MLS team. So we'll see how it goes. But the first five picks, I'd say even the first 10, really, once all the generation Adidas players are gone, I think that's when you're going to start sitting there. Okay, is this guy actually going to have a chance to stick? The Earthquakes last year, going from my own point, because I'll be paying attention to what the Earthquakes do at number two, because there's a chance that they can get a very, very solid prospect and help fill out their issues and stuff like that. They've got the left back hole filled up. So now you're looking at, They're probably not going to go the fullback route with that number two. They've got fullbacks in the system that are young and are cheap that they've already brought in there that can serve the backup role. So there's interesting things there. Do they go with the Andre Shinyashiki route? I would love to see him in there. You know, the they need goalkeepers. Dane St. Clair is fantastic. There's forwards. There's a couple of defenders and wingers that are in there. Griffin Dorsey and Siad Haji. That are in there. So, you know, there's really solid players in this draft that I think that could help the Earthquakes. But like I said, you got to target those generation Adidas picks. That's where the Earthquakes need to be targeting. And we'll see, as the draft unfolds, kind of where those generation players go is where we're going to actually see, some really good, you know, finds in that draft, because there's been times in the past where like a guy like Christian Roldan drops all the way down to like the 20s. Or the eight, you know, a late pick, in the equivalent, NFL equivalent would be 20s. And probably at the time he was drafted, he was probably 14 or something like that. But, you know, Christian Roldan is a solid midfielder that a bunch of people overlooked on the generation of his contract, and has turned into a U.S. men's national team player. So, there's a lot of, you know, follow those generation Adidas players because they're getting contracts because they're good and the league believes that they can contribute. So I think that's going to be outside of Cincinnati. That's what is really going to be, I think, the thing that I focus on the most in the draft.
Definitely, Dan. And just a reminder for you folks from a note-taking standpoint, those generation Adidas contracts allow the team to pay the players a little bit more so they get a little bit more cushion for coming out of college early in the event that things don't work out and they want to go back and finish their degree for financial professional reasons, but that also doesn't count them against the cap. So in terms of your actual cap hit, those generation Adidas players for a solid 3, even 4 years potentially are, you know, going to be the league minimum roster spots, and it makes it very, very easy for you to move them, you know, from a senior spot to a supplemental to a reserve roster to really give you more roster movement flexibility that's really beneficial. I agree with you in principle, Dan. I guess the one thing that I'll say that's unique about Cincinnati from their standpoint is just being an expansion team, they still have a full roster to fill out where, you know, even, you know, the MLS teams that cut a lot of players that haven't done a whole lot of moves, like they still have a 20-man squad for the most part. You know, even the ones who are rebuilding, they've already made a whole lot of signings. You know, if the San Jose Earthquakes and the Colorado Rapids had to play a friendly tomorrow against each other, they could fill, you know, a full 18-man squad comfortably, even if they had an injury or two, and then be okay from a positional standpoint. Cincinnati's had a very busy offseason because they just don't have as much of an MLS roster. So at the very least, maybe they think, you know, if we just accumulate a whole bunch of draft picks, you know, even if we just have 3 or 4 in the second round and then maybe a fourth rounder, one of those guys is going to end up working out and that's worth it compared to, you know, having to spend a whole bunch of allocation money to try and get an actual proven player in MLS. I agree with you that I think some of the concerns about FC Cincinnati in terms of how they're building a roster is certainly coming to play. The fact that they said, you know, they were kind of mums about, well, you know, we're not going to be Atlanta, but we're not going to be Minnesota. But then, oh, we're not signing another big DP until the summer at the absolute latest. And then you've got a team that's going big in on the draft. There's not a whole lot of precedent for teams either from the NASL or the USL expanding into MLS with a significant chunk of their roster being made up of that lower division roster and them immediately having success. I don't think Cincinnati needs to make the playoffs in any way, shape, or form, you know, in order to have a good season or have their fans be excited in 2019 or be ready for 2020 in their second year in MLS. But it's just, this is looking a lot more like a Minnesota, you know, RSL kind of build, Dan. And I have my concerns about that given, you know, where the Eastern Conference is, and especially since just one question that I've kind of always had about some of these teams, even some of the ones that are in MLS, is, you know, the notion, for example, I'll use Sounders fans, for example, since they've made the playoffs every single year that they've existed in MLS, and it's, oh, you know, Sounders fans are great and everything. And my response to that is, well, put what the San Jose Earthquakes or the Colorado Rapids have been over the course of the past 5 years in any market in MLS. And I would say with the exception of maybe three, you know, you're going to have poor attendance at the gates. You're not going to have great TV ratings. You're not going to have other fans, you know, super excited to watch them play other than having their team beat them super easily. You know, you're going to have, you're not going to sell out games. Tickets aren't going to be super expensive. You're not going to get a whole lot of merchandise. I think Portland is definitely a market that would be separate from that. I think Seattle has the potential to be that, but just given that they play in an NFL stadium, you know, 25,000, that's normally great for most MLS teams. 25,000 in CenturyLink isn't that great. Bring it back around to FC Cincinnati. FC Cincinnati always had a really, really good team in USL. They made the playoffs every single year. They won, I believe, twice what the equivalent of the Supporters Shield would have been. Not a whole lot of success in the playoffs, but you know, if you're a casual sports fan or a just a casual soccer fan in Cincinnati or the southern part of Ohio or the northern part of Kentucky, going to a game there, that it's A, going to be reasonably priced, B, that you know you're going to have a good competitive team and that they're going to play a fun style of soccer. And with the way that they're building that team, you know, I think those fans could be potentially in for a rude awakening. And if FC Cincinnati goes the route of what Minnesota has been, you know, Adrian Heath and Manny Lagos need to win this year. Otherwise, heads are going to roll. And if it weren't for the new stadium, like, they could be looking at not great attendance and a financial situation just with how bad the Loons have been as an MLS club. And I just wonder, is FC Cincinnati going to be able to correct for that? Or are they just going to be able to draft really, really well and then, you know, maybe supplement some of the roster issues that they have there? Let's move on, Dan, since we've talked enough about FC Cincinnati. I have just sort of a general question that was posed on a couple of podcasts I was listening to this week, because everybody's talking about the draft and just, you know, the relevancy of the combine. You know, you hear all these crazy combine stories where you get together, you're coached by a coach who doesn't know you, you know, who's never coached you before. You're with a whole bunch of players you're not familiar with. You're playing like 3 games in 4 days. You're potentially out of position and everything, and people making a big deal about that. Similarly, how there's plenty of examples in the various sports. I look at the LSU quarterback who got drafted by the Raiders and was absolute garbage, but I think through
Jamarcus Russell,
yeah. Who I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, in his combine, they had 75 plays and every single one of them was a completion, and he got a standing ovation from the NFL crew that was there. And to me, from my standpoint, you know, maybe you're looking at a player who, just with where they went to college, Nicky Jackson, for example, who went to Grand Canyon University, kind of hard to find out. I don't even remember offhand what conference that university is in, the other teams that Nicky Jackson would have played. So maybe you don't have film on that player, or maybe it's just a lower division player or a bench player to where you just don't have a whole lot of comparison in terms of how they stack up against, you know, their peers. But if a guy went to Wake Forest or UVA or Stanford and they were starting, you have plenty of game film of them against quality players. They were probably on a PDL or maybe an under 20 or an under 23 team as well. I don't need to see them, you know, put together with a whole bunch of these other players and then try and draw some conclusion from those 3 or 4 days of the combine to then create recency bias that is somehow going to manipulate what has been a 3 to 4, if you're looking at an academy player potentially, or, you know, from their youth days, potentially up to 6 years of data and film and progression and tracking on them to know what they're potentially going to be in MLS. Am I crazy? Do you think the combine still has value? Where does the combine matter and why?
You know, I think the combine has some kind of value just because, you know, there it's a chance for, like, with the way the college season goes. I mean, these coaches, for the most part, aren't outdoing scouting work in person. Do they have their own team that's going out to see them? Yes. And paying attention to it, probably. But the coaches themselves aren't out there, you know, beating the bushes and able to see these players in action unless their team is eliminated and one of the players themselves is playing in the College Cup tournament. So, you know, it's not a very good, with the way the schedules run, it's not a very good point, for coaches and managers and stuff to evaluate guys throughout the year unless they're in a market that has a solid college program that can go there, and, you know, that's very few and far between, really, to have all of those things lined up. So, you know, I think it's kind of interesting, maybe that aspect has not been talked about, enough. And that's one thing that I go to when I look at it. I don't think that the combine should be taken as seriously from a media standpoint. You know, oh, we go in and analyze, and, well, this player played really good in this match, and, you know, but okay. If you can't go and evaluate that and then look at a body of work, numbers and scouting reports and stuff like that from over the years at that university, and make the right decision, then, you know, that in-person scout at the combine is something that I think, benefits a lot of teams. And maybe don't publicize it. Don't have people, you know, commentating on the games. Don't have them streamed. You know, just the coaches are in there just to watch these games, and to evaluate and work with the players and stuff like that. The player interviews, I think, is an important aspect. But, you know, I think blowing up the combine to be what it is the very NFL-ish thing. And it only works for the NFL, where the draft matters and is the only mechanism to bring players into your team. I mean, the way NFL works, all the players who played in the NFL played in a college somewhere, and most of them had to go to the combine to get to the NFL. So, like, that's how that works. But that's not how MLS works. That's not how soccer works around the world. So I think while it's important, and we should continue to do it, and continue to, you know, try and bring young college players in and develop them that way. Because it is not the primary way to do it, I think they got to change something with it. I'm continuing to err on the side of this stuff. You know, the combine is just becoming more and more useless in the current setup that it is. But I think it could be useful with the coaches. And I think that's why we haven't seen it go completely away, is that the coaches do use it to evaluate in a way, ways to bring in new players and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So tweak it a bit. I think that'd be a good way for MLS to go. But as it is, it's starting to kind of be, I get why plenty think it's kind of pointless at this point.
I agree with you, Dan. Okay, let's move on. I guess last big thing that we'll do, you know, everybody's putting out all their draft boards and everything. Dan, is there anybody who you particularly like? Any players who you're particularly curious to see how they're going to go? And feel free to save this for your last word. Any hot takes on who you think the Quakes could be eyeing with the number two spot? Or could they be looking to trade it?
Yeah, we'll see what they end up doing. It'll be interesting because this is not a guy that's come in. You know, the last few head coaches that they've had have had some sort of, you know, stake in MLS. So, you know, Dom Kinnear being a MLS guy through and through. So he's going to go through the draft. He's going to select players. That's how they get Fatah Alashe. That's how they get Andrew Tarbell and those kind of guys. Granted, Tarbell was terrible last year, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how Pilato Almeida, you know, goes with this. Does he really see something that he likes and that he can, or does he, you know, opt to trade it and try and get a real player or try and get some kind of cash that can help him buy down an income, you know, DP or TAM player or something like that? I'm pretty convinced that they won't take a goalie. But you know, I think if there's any player that I'm really interested to see go, and where they go right now is of course Griffin Dorsey, from the University of Indiana. Siad Haji, and then of course Andre Shinyashiki, just because of the pure goal scoring numbers for him at the University of Denver. Those are the three that I'm really going to look to. The other one that I'm really going to be interested in is Dane St. Clair, the University of Maryland goalkeeper, who is a very, very solid goalkeeper and a solid you know, prospect. He's been known to be actually really good with his feet. As a goalkeeper, which for if you are a team that is in that upper, you know, the top 10 picks or so, that's going to play a possession based style, to have a goalkeeper that can play with their feet, and is comfortable playing out of the back, that could be a really good thing. He's a pretty good shot stopper too. So, those are kind of the three, four players I'm looking at that I'll be interested in to see where they go. And then of course the, you know, interesting thing is we'll see what happens on draft day. How seriously the teams value their picks. Cause, you know, it's obvious that Philadelphia doesn't value them because they traded them all to FC Cincy. But the whole, you know, we'll see what FC Cincinnati and how they actually value them and how they plan on using them, kind of come to fruition tomorrow, or not tomorrow, Friday.
Yes. So you stole my lead there with Andre Shinoshiki. I got to watch a couple DU soccer games, this past season. I spoke to him a couple times, as a member of the media. I think he's a fantastic false nine. You know, the MLS comparison would probably be Dom Dwyer and maybe a little bit of, Nemanja Nikolic as well. I think if you're definitely looking for a striker, he's probably the first center forward off the board. The winger whose name escapes me from Syracuse, Tejan Buchanan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I think he's a better attacking option. But I mean, in terms of like just who's the first number nine who's going to get taken off the board, you know, again, if you make the NFL comparison of, you know, who's going to be the first linebacker, the first left tackle, or, you know, the first weak side safety, for example, Shinyashiki's definitely that. And I think, you know, pretty much any one of the top five teams in the draft pick, could use forward help. I think, you know, just because of the player comparison in terms of who he could mold his game after, Orlando City at three and Chicago Fire at five would be two really, really good options. If he wanted to play, you know, right away, I would say probably one of those, either the 9 or the 11 pick from the New England Revolution. Just because I think he's different enough from what Teal Bunbury is, to where I think that asset is going to be able to work for him. I don't know that he fits very well in a slightly defensive pressing style, but if he wants minutes, I think that's probably his best bet. If he wants what's going to be a good fit for me in terms of learning from somebody else, Dom Dwyer, Nemanja Nikolic, it's kind of hard to get any better than that for a team that didn't make the playoffs and is picking top five in the draft. Let's move on to rapid fire. Dan, we've got a bunch of things to talk about. First of all, Children's Mercy Park was ripping up some turf and installing some new stuff, Dan. I found out a lot more about this when I spoke to the Colorado Rapids turf manager a couple weeks ago for Holding the High Line. What's Sporting Kansas City doing? How great's the technology? Does any of it make sense? And more importantly, will they be more prepared for a potential, major game in December that is very, very cold?
Yeah, hopefully a major game in December, and hopefully the ones that are going to be coming up here in February. Sporting Kansas City will be installing installing an undersoil heating element to the field at Children's Mercy Park. They're also getting one of those dope over the top heater. If you've seen the ones like at Red Bull Arena or even at places in the Premier League, and they have that giant like lamp thing that they kind of roll over the grass. Sporting normally, and Children's Mercy Park normally has their field in really, really good shape. But an interesting run of concerts, and then the USL kind of strong-arming Sporting Kansas City into moving Swope Park Rangers to Children's Mercy Park full-time led to a lot of field tear-up. And the field, over the years that I've covered them and watched them, the field last summer and into the fall was probably in the worst shape that I have ever seen the Children's Mercy Park field. It was one of those, like, we used to cut, coming into the press box, we're all kind of looking at each other like, man, what is really, like, the field is never this bad. So they've done the undersoil heating to try and kind of combat some of the wear and tear, they'll bring the over the top thing to kind of, be able to treat it like a Red Bull Arena does. Red Bull Arena has one of the best surfaces to play on in MLS. So, if they continue to work on that, it's interesting, the field cover, and the sun cover of the field is about similar to Red Bull Arena. So, it's a good thing for Sporting. You know, it'll help for the winter games, so the field isn't frozen solid for night games in December, hopefully. Or, well, not December anymore, considering MLS Cup, but maybe even these early season stuff, the Champions League, especially February 21st as they play Toluca in the first leg of their Champions League matchup. You know, that's it. That undersoil heating kind of things can be really nice. So it's nice to see them kind of – if you've ever talked to Peter Vermees, he knows exactly what mixture of grass there that they have at each field, what the percentage, why they choose to do that, like what percentage of ride of blue grass to some through certain and take care of it through certain types of seasons. Full blown horticulture, if that's the right, is that the right term? Am I saying that? I don't know, but Peter Vermees is a full blown grass. I don't know. Peter Vermees is a full-blown grass expert, if you've ever had a chance to talk with him about it. So, Sporting Kansas City kind of taking care of the field, which was an issue last year. So, positive thing and a nice step in the right direction.
Excellent stuff, Dan. We didn't get to talk about it. It's been something we've been talking about, you know, for over a year now with our good friend John Bava. Finally, officially, MLS came out with the press release saying that, you know, the crew have officially been saved. So it's hashtag saved the crew, not hashtag save the crew. Dee Haslam and Pete Edwards, part of the ownership group with the NFL's Cleveland Browns, officially taking over as the owners and operators of Columbus Crew Soccer Club. We talked about it last week with the front office moves they made, bringing in Bezecourt and then new head coach Caleb Porter, who has connections to Ohio, coming in. So that's officially happened. We all knew this was happening. I guess the one thing I'm really excited about is the vision that they came out with in that press release, Dan, saying that, you know, they wanted to, you know, try and move the club forward. You know, obviously Precourt was, you know, drying the team dry with every opportunity he had to make as many excuses as possible, financial or otherwise, in wanting to move the team. And now you've got an ownership group that has commitments already in the state of Ohio, that's committed to keeping the club there in Columbus and is ready to turn them into something else, you know, with the new front office move, a potential commitment to bring in a little bit more money, maybe not Toronto FC or, you know, or Atlanta United money, but that's certainly better. And, you know, we'll see where the, you know, the gumption regarding the potential new, you know, downtown stadium that I've likened to a mini version of the Walderstadion, where BVB Dortmund plays, you know, would be really, really interesting. So things are on the up and it's finally official. We saved the crew. Good job, everybody. I'm really happy that this happened for everybody there, in Columbus. You know, I tweeted this out and it got semi-viral, ironically, with FC Cincinnati fans, Dan, where I was saying that, you know, just the prospect of the crew moving would just set a horrible, horrible precedent that everybody should be fearful of. There's so many cities that major sports in this country, soccer or otherwise, have left. There's very, very few markets that they will voluntarily go back to. And ultimately, he who saved the crew saved American soccer and saved all those small market teams. And FC Cincinnati Twitter kind of latched on it because, you know, they wanted hashtag hell is real to actually happen. And we'll be seeing that in August. And I'm very excited. So, you know, in saving the crew, we've saved American soccer. I'm really happy it happened. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to, booing, you know, the Austin team the first time that they come to play the Rapids here in Commerce City. Let's move on, Dan. You gave me this crazy rumor before we hit the record button. I initially didn't believe it. And now that I've thought about it, it makes sense, but it's still really, really weird. Gary Hooper to DC United or Vancouver Whitecaps. What?
Yeah, this is a fun one. I saw this the other day, and before it kind of came out, I was actually right as it came out on MLSsoccer.com. There were more links to it, but I was kind of, I was trying to find somewhere to see if a link and see if I could find some Sporting KC interest or, you know, on some random report, somebody that has a source in the middle of nowhere in Ireland or something like that that can, you know, just turn me onto something. I was on Transfer Market and I was looking at their rumor thing and there were multiple rumors for Gary Hooper to MLS. And I went and then I looked and it was a Sky Sports transfer thing that, the Vancouver Whitecaps and DC United are interesting, in taking on, Gary Hooper, English striker, former, you know, he played for Celtic, Sheffield Wednesday, currently, in the English Championship. Hooper has a lot of goals, 200 goals, and 400 overall appearances since 2006. He's a very solid goal scorer. He has been he hasn't played a competitive match since December of 2017, actually. He's had a groin problem that was recently operated on in November, but it sounds like he is fit and ready to try and reignite his career. We'll see, if this works. Vancouver seems to be the more likely landing spot there. I feel like, DC United are a little bit set on the full striker position. Got a lot of options there. Gary Hooper kind of thrown in there along with Rooney and Acosta and stuff, I think might kind of muddy the waters a little bit too much. Vancouver, though, seems like it's just a setup that he could play. But then again, do you want a guy with groin issues playing on turf? So we'll see where he goes. But Gary Hooper, an interesting name potentially coming to MLS. But I think the more exciting thing will be if Gary Hooper can return to being prolific goal-scoring Gary Hooper if he comes to MLS.
Absolutely. Last thing that we will talk about, Dan, Mark Geiger has officially reffed his last game in Major League Soccer and the greater soccer world as well. He's taking over a director position within Pro, where he'll be primarily tasked for cultivating and training new referees. So fans on the one hand are probably very, very happy, Dan, that they never have to watch the hashtag Geiger show ever. I personally respected a lot of his work. I think some of the hate that he got was unwarranted, though he did have the tendency to make a really big call that was, we'll call it questionable, at the very least 50-50, that ultimately, you know, would decide a game or a major international tournament or something like that. So on the one hand, I think fans are happy with that. On the other hand, they're probably sad that he's training a whole new bunch of referees. So maybe, you know, there's going to be a Mark Geiger refereeing tree and, you know, he's just going to be breeding a whole bunch of Geigers, you know, like a bunch of Geiger spinoff shows or something like that. You know, I still think he did a lot in order to grow this game. And I'm curious to see how he handles from a director's standpoint. Sometimes people who are not perfect at a particular job are really, really good at teaching it or learning from their experiences to then make the next generation better. So we'll see how that goes. I thought VAR has been an improvement to MLS. I still think MLS refs and refereeing and officiating in America in general has gotten better over the course of the years. We still have a long way to go, and we'll see if Mark Geiger can do that from his new position. And in doing so, not completely screw over the Colorado Rapids with a questionable VAR. Was somebody's shoulder offside against a particular goal against the New York Red Bulls? Not referencing anything specific there, Dan. With that, that's it for all the major stuff that we had going on. Dan and I were really busy, and we wanted to do a show, but it's a short show, so time for last words. Dan, where can people find you on Twitter, and any last minute breaking news or super draft hot takes?
Sadly, no last minute breaking news. This has become, we've almost become accustomed to here on this podcast. However, you can find me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. excuse me, ma'am. Last minute draft hot takes. I'll go with that. For one, I can almost guarantee that the San Jose Earthquakes will not take a take a goalkeeper in the draft. So as much as I like Dane St. Clair, I don't think the San Jose Earthquakes will take him. I'm expecting something from the forward range. I would not be shocked if it's Shinya Shiki. I also would not, if it is one of a Griffin Dorsey, or the winger from Syracuse as well. So I would look more to the wings if I'm a San Jose Earthquakes fan. Pay attention there. But yeah, I can almost virtually guarantee that it is not a goalkeeper. So be on the lookout. It won't be a goalkeeper. There's a good chance that number two, based on the Generation Adidas stuff and the combine, I don't think you need, well, the fullback heavy in the draft. I just don't think that's an area that the Earthquakes are going to address with this. They believe in this Peruvian young player that they've gone out and bought. They've got other left backs on the roster. Tristan Partida will be coming back, who showed pretty well for them in his first couple games. I believe got a red card and then like 2 weeks later tore his ACL in practice. Interesting young player, but Partida's been pretty good. They're still kind of high on him. So, we'll see what comes more on the Earthquakes, but don't expect a goalkeeper. I'd look to one of the forward positions if you're a Quakes fan. And that's my hot take. Again, you can find me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. And as always, thanks for listening.
Have to ask you about it, Dan. Don't know how relevant it will be. Sporting Kansas City, no draft until their first round or 21st overall. Any hunches on where they're going positionally, or is it even going to matter to Peter Vermees?
I don't know if it'll matter to Peter Vermees. I think they'll probably end up going somewhere that's a need. I think midfield is a need of theirs. I think they're getting thin there. I wouldn't be shocked if they go deep midfield depth in this, because I believe Juan Cusain will start getting a lot more minutes this year. You've got Kellen Rowe in the mix in the midfield on top of Felipe Gutierrez. Johan Crozet can play in the midfield when Jimmy Madrona comes back in the summer. He'll be able to play in the midfield three. So I think they'll probably go the route of, you know, taking a guy that they believe, you know, did good things in college and, you know, will be good in USL for the Swope Park Rangers. He'll likely go on loan to Swope, and then end up going back out to we'll see if he ever gets a minute for the Earthquake or for Sporting KC. But last year it was pretty obvious that they needed a third goalkeeper, and they really liked what they saw in Eric Dick, so they traded away Andrew Dykstra, Eric Dick, if you watching him in practice is fantastic, and so they were able to fill a really solid, like, they've got two solid backups in Eric Dick and Adrian Zendejas there at keeper. So that was the area that they needed then. They needed a fullback back when they got Colton Storm. I think they'll go area of need and depth, so I'm expecting somewhere in the central midfield out of this one.
Excellent stuff, Dan. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Follow us across all social media platforms at LastWordSC, and check out all of our content, draft-related or otherwise, at LastWordOnSoccer.com. You can subscribe to Last Word Soccer Club Radio anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search LWS Radio. You'll find us and a bunch of other great content that our friends all around the Last Word family are producing. You know, as I teased a little bit in the first segment of the show, Dan, I had a couple sit-downs with Andre Shinyashiki towards the end of his senior season with the DU Pioneers. Article is now up on that, talking about, you know, how he came to DU, how he sort of develops a player, what his playing style is, and where he thinks his future is, either in MLS or potential interest that he has eventually to get to Europe if he can. So check that out, lastwordonsoccer.com. Lastwordonsoccer.com. And then I've also have it pinned to my profile on Twitter as well. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or your team at roughneckscarves.com. Listeners, thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week, analyzing what happened in the draft, and hopefully there's some other off-season news for Dan and I to banter about. We'll see you then.